Greetings, everyone. Welcome to we're reading dirty books. This is Sayla.
I don't know why. Okay, we're not going to stop this recording. We're going to just start again and we can cut off the beginning.
What? We're going to do what?
We're just going to start again.
Why? I don't know how to edit that yet. No, we just got to go.
Okay. This is Kalina.
Oh my god.
Sorry, guys.
That's how this night's gonna be, by the way. It's alright. It's gonna be... This one's gonna be a fun one, so it's gonna be fun.
I saw an internet cartoon today. I shared it on my Facebook page. It was like, does anyone else get the tired giggles? And it's just this girl that starts, like, laughing a little bit and then is giggling and then is on the floor crying and it's like, I'm so tired. And I kind of, like, I shared it because that's exactly, like, where I'm at. Where I'm, like, just... To the point of, like, hysterical laughing tired.
I think we're at that point. This is the latest we've had to ever record. It's getting into our bedtime. We're usually finishing off right now and then calling it good for the night. But right now we're not, so...
So we might be a little delirious.
We are. So, you know, we apologize for that. And we're also, I think it's the technical stuff that we're having to go through, but we're, you know, we're learning as we go along.
Yep. So yep. We definitely didn't have a background in audio visual technologies.
Definitely not.
So we're picking it up as we go, and it took a little bit longer today.
Yeah.
And hopefully we're giving you guys good audio quality. We're not 100% sure that we are, but, you know, we're trying.
We are trying. Definitely.
We have multiple recordings taking place right simultaneously today. Just in case one of them sounds better than the other.
Yeah, we've upgraded to lapel mics.
Ooh, we're fancy.
And we're all fancy and shit. These fucking mics, their cords are 300 feet long.
In case we need to wander the room while talking.
In case we need to do that. Yeah.
All of that being said, we're trying something new tonight, and welcome.
Yes,
joining us for our, 11th episode of We're Reading Dirty Books, which is a podcast where we read paranormal romance novels and then discuss them.
Mm-hmm.
Are we ready to start, or are we good to go?
I think we're good to go. All right. What the fuck ever. Yeah, let's go. What did we read, Kalina?
We read Angel's Blood by... Nope, I don't have that written down.
By Nalini Singh.
Thank you.
And narrated by Justine Eyre. And it's the first of the... Oh, wait, I don't even know what series this is.
Guild Hunter.
Okay, the Guild Hunter series.
You would tell me to know one random thing I didn't write down and not the other things that I didn't write down. So, Angel's Blood, the Guild Hunter series by Nalini Singh.
Mm-hmm.
Read by Justine Eyre. Quick synopsis of this book. It is Elena Devereaux is a born vampire hunter. And in this world, there are vampires. They are known. They are out. They are created by angels.
Yep.
Very unique twist on the whole vampire lore thing. Vampires don't make more vampires. They do drink blood and kill people. But they don't have to kill. They can also just drink blood. But if they go rogue or go wild and they start killing... then they have to be tracked and hunted down by the hunters. And when the angels make vampires, like it's a human that petitions angels to turn them into a vampire for immortality. They really want to live forever. And when the angel agrees to do that, they sign a contract where the vampire has to serve that angel for 100 years. And then after 100 years, they can go be their own free immortal vampire. But until then, there are... basically a servant or a slave of the angel. And then there are also 10 archangels that kind of rule over areas of the globe. They have their own power zones that they are in control of. And there are normal angels, but the archangels are the most powerful, the oldest among them. And there are only 10 in control at any time. And they sit on a group and they kind of, you know, even though there's still like normal mortal power structures, parliaments and presidents and things,
mm-hmm.
the angels, the archangels really run the world. So the hunters, like Elena, get contracted out to go chase vampires. And one day she gets a call that she's been sent to Archangel Tower to meet Raphael, the angel of North America, and he's got a job for her. So she heads up there, and he's got this hunt that she needs to go on. He's keeping it very hush-hush, but it turns out an archangel has gone vampire.
Yeah.
So
he's gone vampire.
He's gone vampire. it takes a long time to really understand exactly what, like, how this happened, how, like, why it happened, but basically he's starting killing and killing in mass and drinking blood in a way that just, you know, with his archangel powers, archangel powers, I just said archangel there.
You did just say.
I didn't mean to.
Spell. Why not? So, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it is. But isn't it Archangel?
It is Archangel.
Okay. But anyway, so he's got to be stopped. And Elena's the best of all the hunters. She has the super ability to be able to smell the vampire blood and really track it in a way that others can't. Her senses are heightened. So during this, there's obvious sexual tension between her and Raphael. But, you know, being a strong warrior huntress, she is not willing to just back down and give in to him. And, you know, he's also fighting some of his, like, I'm not interested in random mortal women. This is weird. And, you know, so there's that love attraction. And you know, that leads to some nice, lovely sex. And that's the short synopsis I'm going to give you. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a good one. This is an exciting one. It was fun to listen to.
Yes, Justine Eyre is really a fantastic. Oh,
phenomenal. You want to listen. We, in the past, have complained about some of the accents that some of the narrators have done. If you guys listen to them with us, you guys understand for some of them, especially that Vlad one was pretty bad. But, oh my gosh, Justine was fantastic. She did, like, 7 different accents, and you could tell the difference between the characters. Elena has a best friend named Sarah, and they have... Not monologues.
Dialogues
together. And you could tell the difference between them. She does such a good job.
She does. And it's subtle. Like, the difference between her Elena voice and her Sarah voice is subtle. Like, at different points the archangels are meeting, and they're from all over the world. So there's an, you know, Asian one, and an Indian one, and a British one, and a Russian one, and all of this. And she has all those. She's move
got them down.
Between all of those accents, very... And some of them are male, and some of them are female. Yeah. And... She does it so well that you really, like, I was very impressed. So
yeah.
I highly recommend her as a narrator in this book or in any other that she probably narrates. And that they're all great.
They were. It was awesome. Super excited about that. And the storyline, Nalini's got a good series going on here. I think I really enjoyed this
book. I really did too. It's different. It takes some of your characters that you think you know vampires and angels, and it kind of turns the world a little, like, at a, like, 90 degree angle, because this is not the way vampires are created in any other series I know of. I mean, maybe it is somewhere else that I'm just not familiar with, but this is completely new. The idea that angels make vampires, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of people a year petition to become vampires, but the angels pick a very select few. They think they do maybe... Around a thousand a year that they turn into vampires. Just not that many.
It's just so...
That's it's so weird. So but then they have to be slaves for 100 years.
100 years out of an immortal life.
Yeah. It should be easy. But it seems like in this world, quite a few go rogue.
Yeah,
and try totally to... It's not that they go rogue to kill. They just think that they can get away from their 100-year contract.
Yeah.
And that's like the bulk of Elena's job. Is tracking down, like, the angels will contract them to go track down their servants that have run away. And the vampires seem to be all like, I can do what I want now. I don't need to wait around 100 years and obey this angel. And I'm like, well, they're angels. Yeah. They seem to have a lot of power and...
They control the world.
You agreed to serve them for 100 years in return for immortality. Why do you think they would let you go? I mean, just why? Like, what makes you think that they'd be like, ah, that's fine. Now I'll let you run away.
Yeah, and there are 10 of them, and they all work together. They have their own regions and everything, but they can ask their counterparts for a hunter in their region to hunt for this vampire that is now in this country, which is what Elena did in the beginning of the book. She
was tracking an Australian vampire for a angel down in Australia.
Yep.
Even though the vampire was in New York. She's
right.
In New York, so... So, yeah. No, I appreciated the storyline, the difference there. I really liked how they kind of, how Nalini interwove modern technology into the story.
Yeah, that was
like
good.
There's these, like, microchips that disable vamps. And so either you can put them, like, on an arrow and shoot the vamp with it, and as soon as it hits the vamp, they get disabled. Or Elena likes to use a collar that has a chip in it, so as soon as she snaps it around the vampire's neck, they just...
They follow instructions.
So they just, like, stand there until you tell them to walk forward or go sit in the car. It's interesting because a lot of the books, especially if there's magic in books, they tend to, like, just ignore technology and not want to deal with how to integrate technology into a supernatural magical world. Mm-hmm. But she was like, here's a place where we probably would figure out how to use microchips to control vampires. Like, why not? So
Because, I mean, Elena does have superhuman strength. Not, like, super, superhuman strength, but she's stronger than the average human.
That's part of her being hunter-born. Yeah, we don't get a full explanation on this. I feel it's something that's probably going to be fleshed out and defined more in later books. Nalini definitely, I like her approach. She does not sit down to define the whole world, like, for you right off the bat. She gives you enough to understand it. So you know what's happening, and you're not just like, well, I don't get what kind of creatures any of these are or what the hell's going on. She gives you what they are and kind of the very basic, like, structure, like, hierarchy. Like, archangels, angels.
Yeah.
What is fucking wrong with me?
I don't know.
Archangels, angels. I can't say the thing correctly. But she gives you, she gives you the basic hierarchy and some of the information. And then, like, as the book progresses, you learn a little bit more. Like, the angels keep a lot of things secret, even in this world, while people know they exist. No one knows where they're from or how they come about. Right. So a lot of humans still think they may be heavenly angelic beings. Others are more on the side of, no, they run around and kill people and are, you know.
They're still evil, even though they're called angels.
They have base human emotions, desires, and needs. So obviously she's not treading that line of making godly creatures. The older they are, they seem to become that, again, with immortality, that the longer you live, the maybe less humanity you have in you, just because of being divorced from a human lifespan really kind of changes your perspective. So some of the oldest archangels are kind of weird, strange beings that aren't really too human anymore. Even Raphael, who we don't get a full grasp on how old he is.
Yeah.
He's been an archangel for 500 years, I feel like they say. But he's definitely older than that. Because you're an angel first.
Yeah.
He's dealing kind of like what our dragon from last book was dealing with. That kind of boredom of just constant immortality. Like, just, like, not on
the next new thing.
I think
they
called it ennui. Of, like, nothing's different or exciting or, like, surprising anymore. And then he meets this woman who is surprises him. Yep. And it's just like, what? You know, stab me with a knife?
She shot him. She shot him in the wing with
the
gun.
In the wings. She broke his wing.
And so this is another thing, like Kalina was saying about the technology. Mm-hmm. There are these bullets that have, it's not a chip, it's...
I think it's an incendiary.
Something that actually disables the different beings that are, you know, so I think it would take down a vampire or injure a vampire, but it also injured Raphael, which normal bullets wouldn't do.
No, angels are very hard to hurt, and the only way was she had to shoot his wing.
Yeah.
Because the wings are the most delicate, I guess, or potential. So, yeah, so she had to shoot that, and then his wing was bleeding.
It was bleeding. And she didn't know what was going to happen. She had no idea that the consequences of that was going to be him, like... He wasn't dying, but he was in a lot of pain.
He was also in a weird state when it happened.
Yeah, he was in a weird state. He did come at her weird. That's true.
He came at her. Like, dude, it's almost like he went and did, like, a heavy dose of meditation and then, like, randomly walked up to her in, like, in a trance state.
Yeah.
And was just not the same him that he had been before.
That's true.
They don't really explain it, but they call it being cold or the stillness. Silence. I don't know. Now I've said three things. None of that is true.
And I can't remember, so. What's new? I only listened to it yesterday.
Whatever. Anyway, he was weird.
At that point, he was, wasn't the Raphael that she had been dealing with up to that point, so. And he's got, actually all of the archangels have it. They have an army of seven.
The seven are, like, your most trusted, loyal servants who have sworn their lives to you. And so he's got a couple of vampire, a couple of angels in that group of seven that are... they don't really like her very much. Well, they would have shot him.
Yeah, she shot him. And they would have killed her had he had not said
But he told her not, yeah.
You guys can't touch her or anything.
So, yeah. So this book is, it's steamy and fun. Yeah. It's one of those that we read in the beginning of this podcast where there's just one really good sex scene and the rest are kind of like teasing interludes where they just, maybe he puts his hands on her hips first or they start to kiss but then they back off and there's a lot of teasing and back and forth between them and tension that builds and builds and builds and then they have their first encounter and they, you know, go full force for it. So that's fun. I enjoy reading books like that because it's a good slow fuck is sometimes.
It is. Oh, yeah.
Really?
The leading up to the actual intercourse is great. And she wrote it very, very well. Leading up to all of that. So, and yeah, in this book, there is really only the one scene. The sex scene, the actual. And it didn't, and even then it didn't get too detailed. I mean, like the parts leading up to it.
That's true.
And then, like.
No, that's true.
He went in and then they fell asleep. That's pretty much how it happened. But it was enough to keep you, like, the way she wrote it and just the story, she tells you enough to keep you wanting to stay on and to keep reading and to continue in the series. So she did a brilliant job with that.
Really
so
good.
It's pretty cool. Another thing that I wanted to bring up about these angels is they have, which I think is really funny, their wings or their feathers give off sparkly angel dust.
Angel dust.
That's, I guess, is it sweet to the taste? Is that what they said? Well, no, it didn't have a taste. What was it?
It's just, it's really rich. It's like, apparently it's like the best, richest, decadent chocolate or first. Like, I don't think it tastes like chocolate, but it's like that. It's the equivalent of that. You know, it sells for, you know, lots of money. Yeah. Humans always like running around after angels collecting it off the ground. Trying to like pick up angel dust and sell it because it's very, very valuable because people just love the taste of it. Yeah. But during like sex or during arousal, the angel can kind of concoct a special angel blend or angel dust blend just for their partner that's an aphrodisiac.
I think that's hilarious.
Oh my gosh.
That's such a good idea.
Yeah, he's like, this is a special blend for you. And I was like,
She's like fucking sparkly, which is like,
well, it gets on her skin and sticks to
it just sticks to her and it's so
she's covered in like gold because his is gold so awesome. So all the angels' wings are different, which is really fun, and his are white with gold patterns and gold dust patterns throughout, and then like there's one with a dark navy blue wings with silver, there's a copper, there's just so all the wings are a bit different and it just sounds really pretty.
I
like the angels.
When I think about this, I go back to characters that I already know just so that I can get a good idea in my head of what they look like. And I was thinking of Castiel from Supernatural because he's got his wings.
Oh, yeah.
And while they're not, none of them are wearing trench coats, I'm sure. But that's the image that I can see in my head and I love it. I think it's so cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just thought that was a fun, cute little thing that she just decided to add and was like, angel dust.
I'd never, that's a new, that's something new too. I thought that was very unique, very creative. It was a creative book and it was a fun read.
Yeah. So I mean, they get together, they fall in love. Let's just get to the point to the end of the book right now. And they defeat the antagonist, which is Euron. He is the archangel that is, he has his bloodlust, so he is turning vamp, and so he's now been destroyed. He is wiped off the face of the earth, like, literally, there is nothing left of him anywhere. And Elena shoots him, so with the same gun that she shot Raphael while he's protecting her. They have the big battle scene in the end, which is cool. But pretty much she goes into a coma for a year. She thinks she's slept for maybe two nights or something like that. She's just like, oh, stop trying to wake me up when I'm sleeping. But she's like literally in a coma for a year. And at the end of the book, her and Raphael are talking and she's like, I can't believe you made me into a vampire because that was the only way to save her because she was on the verge of dying from the battle with Euron. And he didn't say anything. He just lets her think that she's a vampire. And then all of a sudden she's moving on the bed and she looks underneath her and there's black wings underneath her. She's like, oh shit, I'm lying on top of an angel. So she like jumps up and she's like, wait a minute. So she turns into an angel and she's got black wings, which is the type of wings I want.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, especially in contrast to her, like, almost white hair.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
That she ended up with the black wings, mm-hmm. and she's a hunter and mm-hmm. all of that. I think it's really cool. Yeah. Yep, so she becomes an angel. It's a very special, very unusual occurrence. Like, it they doesn't happen.
Yeah. No, they
very
don't.
Often. It's very, 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 very rare mm-hmm. that this is something that could be done and it happened for them, mm-hmm. which is lovely.
Yep.
So, what topics do you want to talk about with this book?
Well, I don't know. We've got a few things that we want to talk about. So, I don't know. Sorry, people. We thought we were ready for this.
let's do a topic first.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. So, you guys obviously have been following us for a while, so we appreciate it. Thank you for coming back.
Yay.
In the beginning, we did mention, you know, we want to start talking about different topics and things about women in general with, you know, talking about their sexualities and our culture and the things that, you know, is happening around us and stuff. You know. So, we're reading these books because they're fun for us, and it occurred to me that, you know, a lot of the sexual content that we've got in these books, it seems aggressive, and we have addressed that in everything that we have talked about.
Yeah.
So
definitely.
The bantering between Raphael and Elena in this book is really no different than the others. I mean, there are points in this book where they're teasing each other and stuff because the sexual tension is there, and he'll say something like, "Well, yeah, I want to see, you know, your lips around my cock," or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, in a typical situation between a man and woman, that probably wouldn't be a very good thing to say.
Well, it depends on the situation. Like, that starts coming up in this book really shortly after meeting.
Yeah, pretty much.
It definitely feels quick, and it feels, in light of current cultural issues, cultural mm-hmm. things that are just going on, and the kind of light that's being shown on male-female relationships, mm-hmm. and not understanding that dynamic real well, and like the way women perceive aggression from men, or mm-hmm. just, and what may not be aggression in their eyes, but just what is appears to women as harassment, because we're coming at it from an imbalance of power. So, and in a lot of these books, I actually think this one is a little bit better than some, obviously yes. better than, we've had some that we don't need to revisit, we've talked about. But even in this one, you know, at the very beginning, it does seem like he's very pursuing, and yes. she's very hesitant.
Yes.
And stop. And
she's got a block.
You know, how far can that go before you're pursuing someone who said, no, you need to stop.
Right.
Right? And, right. And in current culture, and in current everything that's going on around Weinstein and all of the, you know, harassment scandals coming out of Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
And then even just in day-to-day life, working in an office or working around, you know, mm-hmm. the genders working together, it comes up a lot. And so we wanted to talk about that because it's hard to kind of divorce reading books that maybe have that in it from what's going on. And I think it's very important, especially this book was written in 2009. Mm-hmm. So that's almost, you know, it's like 9 years ago. I think it's important to identify that culturally, from a very early age, women are told that being pursued is desirable.
It's flattery.
It's flattering. If he hits mm-hmm. you and chases you in the playground,
then he likes you.
He likes you. That's how he shows he likes you. Mm-hmm. And we're indoctrinated from such a young age to believe that not only is that the way men show affection, mm-hmm. but that it is good and it's desirable to be chased
yep.
and to be pursued, maybe even against your own wishes. And so yep. it's gotten so pervasive. Like, this is so pervasive in our culture that they're in our books. The women in our books are often pursued initially against their initial desires, mm-hmm. what they're, you know, even though there's always that attraction, I think that's kind of how they get around it in some of these books, or like, you know, kind of soften the blow, is the women are attracted to these men. But if they say no, no should mean no. But right. these aren't real books, again. These are fantasy books.
Right.
And so
that
I
we
don't
chose
wanna,
to read.
We are choosing to read right. them. Mm-hmm. And I don't, and like, fantasy should be escapism. And there may be pieces of that that you wouldn't want in your life. Like, I don't want a relationship like this right. in my life. This is crazy. Like, they literally have known each other for 2 days and are now mated partners for eternity.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Take that the fuck away. I don't want it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's always so intense. And I think part of that is just because it's fun to read that intensity.
Yeah.
It kind of amps up your own like desires and your own sexual juices, get everything flowing because it's heightened. But we don't necessarily want to give the books a pass. I would love to see, now that things are starting to change, that authors maybe embrace that and start finding ways to write the interactions between male characters and female characters in a new light. Let's try to break some of these,
yeah,
like social, cultural norms where we're taught, like, yes, he should pursue you and you can say no and run away, but if he pursues you more, eventually you're going to break down and give in.
Right.
And that's great and sexy.
Yeah.
No. No.
Well, no. Yeah, it's not. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that. I was getting into it.
Yeah, yo, I know.
But
no, I didn't.
No. But yeah, no, we've got to break that mold. And while we're choosing to read these books, and that's, like you said, written 9 years ago, I think all of these books that we have written, I think maybe aside from two of them, the two dragon ones, I think, didn't really have that. You know, the men didn't treat the women in that way, where they were cheating,
yeah,
them and saying the things that they were saying.
Yeah. And I really hope that in the next couple of years we start to find books,
mm-hmm,
that really create a different dynamic and get away from the just, ingrained idea that pursuit against initial rejection is great. But again, I don't have a real complaint with this book. It definitely doesn't come anywhere up to the line of some of our past books where I'm just like, get out of there.
This one was fine, I think. Him saying those type of things to her were in this book, and her saying, hell no, not in a million years is that going to happen, does come up in this book. But she was flirting and acting the same way towards him.
And
but the moment she told him, at one point after he was making different advances to her and saying certain things to her, she did say, is rape your thing?
Is that what gets you off?
Is rape what gets you off? Is when he went, oh shit.
No.
You know,
yeah.
And that's when he turned around and was just like, dude. And made him really think about his actions with her, and then after that he was like totally cool.
Yeah. And every time she did say no in a moment, he backed off.
Yeah.
He still did pursue her, obviously.
Yeah.
But it also started to come at times when she would look at him a certain way and say,
yeah,
like, hey, let's go do this.
Yeah. You
know? Like, they did not have sex until she, like, basically asked him to.
She pretty much said, I'll take you up on your offer.
I will take you up on your offer. Yeah. I want you to fuck my brains out.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, you have enthusiastic consent,
yes,
which is what is really big,
yes,
in the world now, and let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, yes, I want to do this, and he's, mm-hmm, like, all right, me too.
Let's go.
So both parties were
on
board for consent, so that's great. Another part of this book that I thought was really strong feminism-wise was there's a lot of internal monologue for Elena about, she's kind of comes off as prude in this society, because even among the other hunters, she doesn't just jump into bed with them a lot, even, mm-hmm, though they've all wanted to. There's always the underlying fear that hunters will end up sleeping with vamps, because vampires are very seductive, like their scent is seductive,
mm-hmm,
to humans, and because hunters can sense their scent better, a lot of them come off as very attractive. Like, she's constantly attracted to Dimitri because of his scent. Like,
yes.
He's forcing the scent on her the whole time, wafting it in her direction, because, mm-hmm, he knows it's hormones, basically.
Yep.
It's like pheromones.
Pheromones.
It's like constant pheromones, and she gets very turned on around it. But as soon as he leaves, she's like, God, I didn't.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't think about him again, because it's just in those moments.
Yeah, and he's actually a big deterrent in her trying to locate urine, because she can't do anything when Dimitri's around.
Yeah, she can only smell him.
She's so distracted by him.
But she's always resisted that. She's,
mm-hmm,
never given in and slept with a vampire. She has kind of a prudish attitude about those relationships. And she doesn't sleep very much with, like, the other hunters. So everyone kind of, they call her, like, you know, Vestal Virgin and all that shit that women get labeled when they aren't,
floozy. They are labeled as a slut.
Floozy slave.
Right.
Yeah. You know, one of the two. You can only be a virgin or,
right,
or a slut. Magdalene.
Yeah.
So in her head, she talks about how her strength and her being such a top hunter in a very, like, male-dominant,
mm-hmm,
field has always scared other men. And,
mm-hmm,
they, you know, think of her as masculine, and they think of her as, like, yeah, she's not feminine enough. They tell her that she emasculates them. And I just, that fucking drives me batshit insane. Because there's nothing, like, the whole word emasculate and used in this context is so fucking stupid. And it's like, okay, you're a man. You identify as a man. You have your penis and your balls. Me being a strong woman does not change that fact. You still are a man who identifies as a man and has your penis and your balls.
Okay.
I can't remove those from... I mean, I could just physically chop them off, but my strength and my existence as a strong woman does not remove your gender.
Right.
Your gender cannot be taken away from you by somebody else.
No.
Your reaction to me, if you encounter a strong woman and you feel like less of a man because of it, that says a whole lot more about what you think men are.
Yeah.
And how you think that, than it says anything about that woman and her strength.
That's all on you.
It's all on you, and you think you're defined in your relationship to women. And if you aren't, like, dominant, and if they aren't meek and cowering, then you're less of a man. That's your fucking problem.
Yeah.
But guess what? Your balls and your dick are still fucking there. Nobody's taking them. They're still fucking
there.
They're
still there.
Now, I'm sure that some people out there have been actually emasculated, in which case, I'm sorry. That's a different story, though. That's not just, oh no, I met some woman who's independent and strong, and now I'm not a man anymore.
Right.
Bullshit. You're still a man. You're
still
just
a
weak
man.
One. And that's your fucking problem and not mine. There's no counter for it in women. Like,
no.
For women. We don't have a word that denotes, at least I don't know of one.
Defeminizing? Defeminizing?
I don't know. Is that a word?
Defeminizing?
But we don't, if it exists as a word, it is not one I've heard. And women don't relate to world in ways of, oh, well, that negates my feminism.
Yeah, you make
my
me
femininity.
Feel like less of a woman.
I'm less of a woman because of your strong masculine? No. That's not even, that's insane.
You are too feminine for me. Now I feel like less of a woman.
Oh.
That's what it would be.
It would have to be that way, wouldn't
yeah.
it be?
Yeah.
You are... What?
Yeah.
No, you're a weak man, so I'm less of a woman? What?
I'm more...
See?
It doesn't work! It doesn't fucking work! Can't even put that together.
Because it's nonsense. The fact that there's a whole group of men out there who, mm-hmm. honest to God, believe that strong women emasculate them is crazy to me.
Yeah.
So I really liked that this book touched on that, and she's really excited by Raphael because, you know, he mentions to her that all his lovers have been warrior women,
mm-hmm.
and that he's not interested in the other archangel, Michaela, who
mm-hmm.
is constantly kind of hanging around him and, like, throwing herself at him and, like, trying to mark him as her territory.
Yeah.
He's like, she was many things, but she was never a warrior.
Right.
You know, basically
mm-hmm.
saying, like, she may be beautiful, and she may be powerful and old, but, you know, she was all these things, but she's not a warrior,
yeah.
and I like the warriors. So
yeah.
He's not intimidated by her, and that's always, you know, just something I really like to see in these books, where this is one of the first ones where we've had the woman protagonist be, you know, so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Without really being, like, she had some powers, but she wasn't really supernatural
right.
before. But she still, you know, held her own and, like, was pretty awesome with a gun and with a blade and,
mm-hmm.
you know.
She held her own for sure. Like,
yeah.
she was definitely the warrior that he's talking about that he is wanting.
Yes. Yes.
So
I liked that. So this book had a couple of really strong, like, social, or maybe just this one. But I pulled it out, and I immediately flagged it, because she was like, you know, she mentioned one of my trigger words, which is emasculation.
Mm-hmm.
I just get
mm-hmm.
so, like, you're
yeah.
fucking, your dick's fine. Shut up.
No, that's a good, some point in our relationship, in my relationship with Dan, there was 1 year where I made more money than him. It was a temp job. It was short-lived. It was only a year. And he at one point told me that he didn't feel like a man, or like I was downsizing him because he wanted to be the sole provider of our relationship. And I'm like, well, you still can. Just because you're not the breadwinner right now doesn't make you any less of a man. But he didn't feel that way. He felt like, no, I should be making more money than you. And now that I think about it, sitting here right now, I'm actually getting a little angry.
Oh,
thinking
Jesus,
about it.
Girl.
Because before I was just like, don't worry about it. It's all good. Because I generally wouldn't care about that. But now that I'm thinking about it, now I know what he fucking means by that. Dan, do you hear that? We're going to have a discussion about
Dan,
this.
I am not happy to hear any of this.
I'm also sorry that I said that and Kalina's going to have words with you. But but he did say that at some point. And I think for him, I think it was just because he wanted to be, for himself, a better person to provide for he and I. And
I get that. I think, and he's trapped in the same social construct yes. that all of us are trapped in. Yeah. The same, you know, what taught us as little girls that we needed to be chased, or that yeah. when men chase or boys chased us, that was them telling us that they liked us, is the same societal pressure that has taught him from a young age that the man grows, you know, makes the money mm-hmm. and brings it home and provides for his that's family. True,
yeah.
And that's just an outdated view of the world. It's yeah. but true for a very, very long time. Women mm-hmm. couldn't have credit cards or jobs if they right. weren't, you know, if their husband didn't approve. So that was the way the world worked. Mm-hmm. Now, how much better is it to have two fucking incomes? As a person who is only supporting themselves with their own one single income, mm-hmm. I'd like to have two.
Like, yes. You know? And I have to say, I wouldn't have most of the things that I have now hadn't have been for Dan, who is, you know, now the sole provider of our family, but still, he, you know,
well, no, you I work bring in you're my not, own. I he's am not the sole provider.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, the
he may be primary. Oh, yeah, he's higher. He's provider? The higher earning.
Sorry,
yeah.
I didn't mean to say sole. I do. I yeah. am. I am a working mom, which I'm very proud of.
Mm-hmm.
But Dan is definitely...
Well, yeah, he's been Dan. With he's, his company. He's been with his company fucking ever. For, he better yeah. be making a bunch.
Yeah, so I think now, I think he wouldn't mind if we went back to that. That, you know, that's a good example of that. And you know what? It's not fair, even on both sides.
No.
So it sucks for the woman having to go through those...
Or being concerned that if she is, a you know, in a great job that makes yeah. money, that her husband's going to feel like less of a man.
Exactly.
That sucks for her, and it sucks for guys to feel that way.
Yeah, I was like, going to say, he shouldn't hurts. Have to feel like that.
This is why I'm so pro-feminism. It's for both genders. It's not just to empower women.
Exactly.
But we really need to unshackle men from the constructs of society that yep. have held them down, too.
Yeah. Because
there's no reason mm-hmm. they should feel at all. That's part of why we still have such pay inequality
mm-hmm.
because the idea is men still need to make more. Well, fuck all that. If you do X work, you should get paid the same amount
yep.
of money
yep.
for the work that you do, and it shouldn't be yep. any different depending on gender. And that's just, we got to get there eventually. We got to yep. get to pay equality. But I do think, like, I know Dan pretty well, and I don't feel like he's
no.
like that anymore. I'm sure he was that, just knowing when that was a long time ago.
That
was he
a
was
long,
very
long
young.
We were
so
young.
He's come a long way since.
I think
then.
So.
Also, I think it's hard. You don't spend a lot of time with me and don't get some of these concepts shoved down your throat over
oh,
and over again
no,
until it changes.
Right.
Until
no,
it
for sure.
Changes
and
who
I,
you are as a
and
person.
I know for a fact, I could tell you right now that he doesn't feel that way, because if he had a sugar mama that made more money than him, then he wouldn't have to work as hard as he does. And he works hard.
He works really fucking
he
hard.
He works really hard to provide for us. So that's all great. So I think that he would be like, yeah, if you want to fucking work, and actually we've had that conversation, he would be all fine with it. So that was just a short period in our life that we went through that. So yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad it's over.
Over with. I'm still sorry. You're going to have to talk to Queen.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to have to talk about this. What you talking about, Dan?
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay. So wow, sorry.
No, that was a good, I think those are good topics, and this is exactly the type of thing that we want to
yeah
talk about,
I think we
so.
Forgot about these for the past couple books, like we kind of
yeah
we hit a slump, and we apologize if those were maybe a rough couple of episodes.
I mean, that was a big bunch.
It was. It was like three or four.
We're still very new at, like,
we're
this is,
learning.
We're still learning.
Yeah. But we're going to try to remember that this is stuff we wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Luckily, this book triggered these things
yeah.
for me, and I was like, I wrote them down. I was like, we have to talk about these things. And I'm hoping that we can keep that up with future books, because
yeah.
I think it's just important. Like, you know,
mm-hmm.
I want to talk about these within the context of our current culture and our changing cultural
yep.
landscape, because it is. We're at such a pinnacle time with the Me Too movement and just Believe Women and
mm-hmm.
like things that are coming out about the way women's lives have been led and have been lived in this world
mm-hmm.
that I just men have not known.
Oh, yeah.
They have not acknowledged, they did not realize.
Yeah.
And even good men who are allies, quote, allies. It's just, it's still, like, it's just coming out that this is constant, like, stuff that women have dealt with and thought about and faced
yep.
in some way or another throughout their lives from a young age. And while I love books like this, even they are trapped in the social constructs
yeah.
of our world. And
yeah.
I hope that we can start to see that change. We're going to have to look for that. We need to put that on our list of reading newer novels.
Sure.
You know, a lot of the times we're still reading older books mm-hmm. here just yeah. because they're the ones we find or
right.
they're on lists that we have been told we need to read or whatever. Mm-hmm. But anyone who has a suggestion, if there's something new out there
yeah, we'll take
that's
it.
Like written in the last year or so and kind of deals with this and it flips that script on the male-female relationship so there isn't necessarily any pursuit against wishes.
Yes.
I'd yeah. love to read that.
Yeah.
Because I think it can be done and still be sexy.
Absolutely. Well, it's just, I mean, like, we're trying to break the whole faux pas of women even speaking about sex openly and the oppression of us.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't want to make myself sound special, but I also grew up in a culture, while I'm first generation American here, I was raised by foreigners. I was raised by Cambodians who raised me as Cambodian and American. And I was raised in a culture where women were beneath men. Just, mm-hmm. you were just, that's just how it was. I had to do everything else that my brother didn't have to do. And I always questioned it. I was always the kid that was the bad one because she questioned everything that she was told to do. Well, why do I have to do that when he doesn't have to do that? So yeah, I'm all for talking about this kind of stuff. I'm not gonna raise my boys in that way. They're gonna, if they accidentally touch me on the boobs or something like that, and they're 4 years old, they don't know any better. I do tell them, I say, you don't touch women there. That's not where you touch girls. You don't touch any part of another person's body if they don't want to be touched.
Yep.
So, you know, just in general and things like that. So
yeah.
Yeah, right. We're getting back to it.
Yes. Sweet. All right, so I think next is kiss and tell?
Yeah, so
kiss and tell.
Kiss and tell. So in a lot of these books that we've read, both of the characters, the man and the woman, have always been afraid of that one topic, the four-letter word, and we don't mean fuck.
They're not afraid of.
They're not afraid of fucking. They're always going to fuck. It's the act of loving, of love. They're afraid of falling in love. They're afraid of giving their whole to somebody, one that they have never met before, or are afraid of, or don't know anything about. They're afraid of falling in love. So our kiss and tell today is going to be maybe the first time we fell in love, or what we think about, you know, love at first sight, or how you feel about the fear of people falling in love, or things like that. So, you know, yeah. I think that's a good topic, because pretty much all of our characters are like, no, I'm not ready for this, because 500 years ago, my heart was broken by a woman who, whatever, whatever. The other one is, no, my boyfriend dumped me and disappeared and never saw him again. I'm never going to fall in love again. Well,
yeah. Well, a lot of these characters are from, like, broken homes.
That's true.
Like, almost none of them have really great...
all of them have broke... Except for the girl that went to...
right.
Except for the one that
but she
really
was
hated.
Adopted. We
That's right.
She so she doesn't count anyway.
Right. Not that adopted doesn't count.
Yeah, no, I know.
That is
no,
not what we're saying.
I just mean I didn't like that book.
Yeah, that's all we meant. We don't mean anything about
adoption
that
does count. You just, still have a family if you're adopted.
That book was bad. That was a bad book.
But I mean, what I do mean is because she didn't know and was never told that she was adopted, in the book she kind of, she went from her idyllic family to a
yes.
broken home. The vision she thought she had of her life fell mm-hmm. apart because she discovered that her family wasn't what she thought it had been. That's what I mean.
Yeah, yes.
So see, that's even it. Her
see,
was part of the
yeah.
broken home.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, let me backtrack that one. I can talk my way out of anything. My dad's a lawyer.
He sure is.
But, awesome. So I think for a lot of the characters, so they have all this baggage.
Mm-hmm.
Even the ones that aren't a million years old have yes. baggage. I don't know. It's an interesting topic because they all do seem reluctant to fall in love, mm-hmm. but then every one of them manages it within the span of usually a week,
yeah.
which is unheard of.
Pretty much.
That's real fast. So
it is real fast. But I think, and this, so this is my,
yeah,
what I
yeah,
feel
you
about
tell.
This topic.
Yeah.
I think love is instant, and I think you know right away. I feel like it is.
Okay.
I don't know if I throw it out too much. I'm not afraid of falling in love. I think that is the most beautiful feeling in the world. I'm not religious by any means. I believe in love. Love is my religion. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's a song, isn't it? I think it is. Or part of a song or something like that. But anyway, so that's why I'm not afraid to put my all into something that I believe in. I believe in falling in love. And I've been in love even before I met my current husband, who I love so much. But I think that, you know, if the opportunity if I should have to fall in love again, hopefully not, mm-hmm. that it wouldn't be hard for me to do it. And I don't know that that would hurt me. I wouldn't be afraid to do it. Mm-hmm. Because while heartaches suck, like mm-hmm. literally they break your heart mm-hmm. and it feels so bad, the feeling of falling in love and being in love is so much stronger than that heartache. So for me, I'm not afraid of it. I'm not scared of love. I'm not scared of falling in love. Mm-hmm. It's just so wonderful. It's just such a great feeling. The end.
The end. That's it. Let's take I don't know. I think that there's a strong likelihood that I don't think I've ever been in love. I'm like 180 degree different from you, I think. I think I'm very overly protective of myself and cautious. Mm-hmm. And so I really can't say. I thought I was once, but I don't think looking back on it that I was. Maybe I could have been if I had let myself at that point, but I don't know that I did. And so sure. that's why I probably wasn't ever in love. Yeah, I can't say. But that's something that is, I don't know.
So, here's something that I tell people if they're, I have been asked before, how do you know? How do you know that he was the one? Or how do you know you're in love? Mm-hmm. There's no explanation. You can't mm-hmm. explain it to anybody. I can't tell you, oh, you'll know. I mean, I can tell you that. But you're going to be like, okay, I must not be because I don't know. You mm-hmm. know, the only thing I can say is,
you'll know.
I know that's so stupid. I can't say it. But you can't explain that feeling. Mm. It's almost like, how do you explain an orgasm? Mm. It's just, you know?
Yeah.
You don't explain. Yeah. It's the same way. You can't explain when you have fallen in love. I don't know.
That's such a physical feeling. Like, yeah, it is. I mean, I feel like we could find the words for it.
Love for me is physical. I mean, it's obviously it's a lot in here. It's inside. It's, I don't know. I can't explain it. There's just the,
I don't even like talking about it. This is making me ill.
What I'm trying to tell people is you have to, obviously, and I know you do, you love yourself. You gotta love yourself first before you let anybody mm-hmm. love you. You have to do that. There's nothing wrong with loving yourself.
Oh, no.
And once you have loved yourself and allow yourself to be loved, you are going to be more accepting of it. Mm-hmm. I think for me, what I would say is don't be afraid to get hurt. Because it's going to happen. You're gonna get hurt.
Yeah.
That's inevitable. There's gonna be ups and downs in every relationship that you're gonna have, even when you do find that one. But you shouldn't be afraid of it, and it should never deter you from allowing yourself to be loved or allowing yourself to love another. Because it's just, I'm getting teary eyed just thinking about it because I love Dan so much. Yes. You know what I mean? He is my world. Mm-hmm. My kids are my world. But for the love that Dan and I have together, it's just so incredible. I don't know. That's why I'm always rooting for it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm always like, yeah, just fucking go for it. Because you never know. And it may suck. It may fucking tear you apart. But you're going to find it eventually again, and it's going to mend it, and it's going to be fine. And then you're going to be like, yeah, you know what? That sucked, and I don't ever want to experience that again. But you won't actually know the true feeling of love until you know what love wasn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't know light without dark. You know what I mean?
Yes, I agree with that.
So, ooh, sorry.
No, that's
good. My heart is beating so fast. I didn't realize how like touchy this one was gonna be too, but
yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad that you had that to share.
Oh God,
with the groom. Woo, because I don't have.
That's okay.
Yeah,
that's totally. I mean, oh, duh. That was a dumb thing to say too. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. We're even. Oh no. So.
Okay. We gotta move on.
We gotta
move on.
I
just don't have anything else.
No, that's fine. If you don't have anything else to say about it, that's cool. I said my 40 minutes of it, so I think we're good. I think it's an important feeling. But hey, let's segue our way out.
We need something funny to end on, though.
Sorry.
That's okay. No, I don't know.
I got serious about that last kiss and tell.
Oh, I know. No, we had another kiss and tell. One that's lighter. And it was, what about falling asleep?
Falling asleep after sex.
And we have funny things we can talk about.
Okay.
Okay, because that basically is what happens in this book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they have sex and then they're asleep.
Yeah.
So, what do you guys think about that? Here's my problem. And I know it's nonsense. Well, it's not nonsense. I know that these are fake people and this is a fake world. But my number one issue is I'm always very concerned that these ladies are going to get UTIs. Because they always are having, like, all of this sex and then just going to sleep. And I'm like, no. You have to get up and go to the bathroom. Because you don't want to get a UTI. And, like, a really high percentage of ladies' UTIs come from sexual intercourse. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of friction happening down there. And certain sweat and particula might be...
Debris. Might be
pushed into the urethra in a way that's not great.
Yeah.
But if you get up right afterwards and you go urinate, you'll get it all out. And then it won't go into your bladder and turn into an infection. So ladies.
PSA for the episode.
Kalina tells you more things that she thinks she knows. About things. But this one, I know this one. This one is like legit. And, I mean, obviously, if you've never had a UTI and you've never taken the precaution of urinating after sex, then you're probably fine, whatever your biology is. Maybe it just doesn't work out that way for you. Or maybe you just, your bladder is immune to infection and you're awesome. And you're Wonder Woman and good for you. But
you're immune to UTIs.
But if you find that you're frequently getting UTIs and your doctor hasn't told you or asked you about this, you might want to try it. Because I do not know. I get up after sex all the time and I'm like, I gotta go pee now.
I can tell you now that my doctor has never told me that.
I find that so upsetting. Mm-hmm. Like, gynecologists should definitely be giving women heads up on this. Because this is real.
Mm-hmm.
And men should know it too.
They
They might try to fall asleep on top of you, which one is uncomfortable. And two... means now I gotta roll your ass off me so I can go to the bathroom and not get an UTI.
Yeah.
I'm concerned with my own body and not wanting a fucking infection.
I mean, it all makes sense and I get, and now I'm gonna be really conscious of it and, you know, after my throes, that's what I'm going to do. But I didn't know of it. It makes total sense.
Well, have you ever had a problem with UTIs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. No, I don't know if that's...
That's it. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, no, it's not every UTI can be explained by this.
Sure.
I mean, a lot of our seniors in our care have UTIs. It happens when you're older, too.
We used to have a hot tub.
Oh, those are bad.
So, you know what I mean? So, but that in particular.
Yeah.
Just
go pee afterwards and you'll be fine.
You'll be fine. Thank you. Thank you for telling me.
Thank you, everyone. You're welcome. I'm bestowing my vast, vast wisdom upon the world. But no, I am. And it scares me in movies, like movies and TV shows, so many times. And I understand they don't want to show the woman, but it's just so unrealistic. It's like, get up and go pee.
Mm-hmm.
And instead they're just like, oh, let's fall asleep in each other's arms. And I'm like, no.
Sorry.
Do you know how horrible a UTI is? Now I gotta go treat it with, like, cranberry juice and a whole bunch of fucking water. And if it doesn't clear up fast, then it's antibiotics, which means you're gonna get a yeast infection. And now your vagina's just fucked. Because, all because you didn't go pee.
After you fucked.
After you fucked. And now you can't fuck because your vagina is a disgusting mess.
So your inner vagina is actually not fucked.
It's either got a UTI or a fucking yeast infection from the antibiotics to clear the UTI.
Take care of the vag, ladies.
Ladies.
Take care of the vag. That's an important thing.
Just do.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
Going back to the falling asleep after
sex.
Yes,
that's where we started.
I think in general it is like that for Dan and I, mainly because we're like, hey, the kids are asleep. We're already in bed. Let's get this shit done and then go to bed or like go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
For Dan, it's usually when he's like half awake anyway, because the guy is always tired. So he will fall asleep immediately and then I'll like, you know, get on Facebook or something. And then get bored of looking at other people's lives and then go to sleep.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to fall asleep right after. It's super easy, especially if I usually have been drinking. Which makes it sound like I only have sex when I'm drunk. Which actually, come to think about it, there might be a correlation there. Judgment has to be impaired judgment that I make choices. But but so, yeah, you add, like, the drowsiness of alcohol. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm against it. Although I do like morning sex. And then I don't fall asleep after that.
Morning sex takes a long time. Sometimes I don't even get off in morning sex.
Yeah.
I think it might be because I'm still half asleep. Because I'm not a morning person.
Oh, yeah. One. That's true.
So, but Dana is like fucking jolly Miss Mary Sunshine in the fucking movie. He'll have whole conversations with me and I'm like, I can't fucking believe you're still talking. Shut up. And I won't listen to half of it. So sex in the morning is like, I do like it, but it is harder for me. Sometimes I'm a little disinterested. I'm like, just get it done.
I get more energy in the morning. I'm not as, like, body weary from the day.
Yeah.
Like, body is more like, nothing hurts right now.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So I like morning sex, in which case, yeah, there's much less chance of falling asleep afterwards, unless it's like a lazy Sunday or something and you've got nothing to do. And you're just like, let's go back to bed.
Let's fucking do it. I like delusional sex. I know that sounds funny, but the delusional sex is when you're like butt-ass tired and you're like, fuck, this day sucked, but I need a bone. So you're like trying to get in the mood and you want him to do all the work and he wants you to do all the work. And so you're both discussing about who has to do the work while you're like kissing and touching and pulling and sucking and stuff. And then it just becomes a silly ass joke because nobody wants to do the fucking work. And then now you're wet and he has a hard on and nobody's moving. Then we're just like fucking talking in circles and then it happens and then you're asleep. Those ones are fun. That happens a lot. Okay. Well, that was a good one.
No, that's good. See? Yay. There we go. All right, guys.
Awesome.
So that has been Angel's Blood by Nalini Singh and also our other ramblings about shit. We hope you enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Our next book is going to be Succubus Blues by Rochelle Mead, and it's narrated by Elizabeth Rogers. This is a book I actually have read. I read years ago when it came out. That's, you know, probably 10 some years ago. But I'm excited to revisit it, and I read it as a physical book last time, so I'm excited to do the audiobook with it. And this is a different type, like, it's still a romance, but it's a different storyline, I think. This is one of the less cookie-cutter story plots that are in the book, so I'm excited for it. I'm excited to share it with you and see what you have to say about this book. And
yeah, less cookie-cutter would be good, because we have been following that same stream.
Oh, yeah, you know. Yeah.
But that's okay.
It's okay. It's like, let me introduce you to a guy, and then a girl, and then they're gonna meet, and oh my god, what's gonna happen? And you're like, that's the plot of every book. Not even in this genre. That's just the plot of books.
It's just right.
That's how books go.
Yeah. The intimate character dynamics are all, obviously, they're different. But in a nutshell,
that's the plot.
So, yeah, I'm excited to get into this one.
I think
one.
This one's a little bit different. So, it's going to be good. Yeah, that'll be next time.
Yeah, so we welcome you to come and continue to follow us and send us an email or hit up on any of our social media if you've got anything to say. Hopefully it's nice because we're sensitive.
Kind.
Just kidding, we're not sensitive. Whatever. Just say whatever you want to fucking say. Oh, nope.
No, you can't. Doesn't mean we're going to listen to your ass.
But right, yeah, exactly. That's true. We are at shdirtybooks@gmail.com. Our Twitter handle and our Facebook are at shdirtybooks. And our shs have three H's. S-H-H-H. Dirty Books. So that will conclude this episode tonight. I am Saylet.
And I'm Kalina.
And we will see you guys soon.
Bye.
Yeah, you've been listening to Reading Dirty Books with Kalina and Saylet. Be sure to tune into the next episode for some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format that allows you to give a rating, please do that for them.
We'd like to thank Jim Townsend for that sexy music and amazing introduction.